It's time to get brutally honest.
You know what Steph called me today? She called me the Serrano of the radio show. It's either like out of the park or swing and miss the curve.
We should have a little Jobu right in front of your seat. Put a little pipe in there, some rum.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Final hour, Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 on the TSN Go app and now on TSN 2. Brian Hayes and Craig Button in here. We've survived the first 2 hours, Craig. We got a big sports night ahead of us, too. Sens looking to survive. I'm more curious to see how many empty seats there are going to be. It's too bad because they've made such a big story out of it. I mean, Eugene Melnyk came out and spoke on it earlier today.
Tom Anselmi, the president, sent out a tweet last night. You know, we need you more than ever. All in. Hashtag all in.
It's almost sad in a way.
But, you know, we were talking a little bit about that, though. But, you know, as the president, like, yeah, you wish it was different. But at the same time, you try to find a way to sell.
That's your job, right? Absolutely. I mean, if you're Anselmi, you're sitting there. You've got to explain to the owner why you didn't sell out Game 6 of an Eastern Conference Final. But this is a real... I think, you know, I was goofing on them last week because I didn't like the idea of them coming out and saying, we're Canada's team. No, it was such an arrogant take, and it sounded phony, and they put the Canadian flags on the back of their helmets. And listen, be you. You're an Ottawa Senators. Sens fans are going to love you. They'll continue to love you. And Canadian fans will continue to watch you. Doesn't mean they're going to support you necessarily. I don't care what anyone does, quite frankly, but I think it's ridiculous to think that someone's going to jump on your bandwagon because your team happens to be in their country.
There's nobody in Western Canada and nobody
in Toronto, Montreal,
that are rooting for the Ottawa Senators. No. Ottawa Senators haven't become Canada's team.
No, exactly.
The Maritimes are Boston Bruins, Toronto Maple Leafs, or Montreal Canadiens fans.
And this is the biggest game in the country this year. Biggest game in the country this year. Is tonight. I mean, just based on the significance of it. And they can't sell out the barn. So now you actually really need the rest of Canada to drive to Ottawa and actually show up. I think it's kind of karma in a way.
If the Leafs were playing there, all those tickets would have been bought up.
Well, and that's what I said on Friday, Craig. The interesting thing is now they want Leaf fans to jump on their bandwagon. But when the Leafs are in town next October, they're not going to want Leaf fans in the building. They're going to be embarrassed by that, or they're going to go... do whatever they can to make sure that they're not.
What playoff year was it? I thought the Leafs fans were brilliant. They were playing the Ottawa Senators. It must have been 04. So they're playing the Senators in the first round of the playoffs.
That was the Nieuwendyk two-goal game seven.
Right, yeah. And they were trying to make sure that the Toronto Maple Leafs fans couldn't get tickets for the games 1 and 2, right, in Ottawa, right? So they really mustered up. But then the Leafs fans went and bought up all the tickets for game 6, anticipating a game 6, right?
Yeah, right.
Because you get them refunded. Like, there's no downside. It's not like buying a regular season game, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if there's no game 6, you get your money refunded back, right, or credited or however they do it, right? And they bought up all, like, and that building for game 6 was just loaded with
Leafs
fans.
Great foresight, isn't it?
It was unbelievable.
That would stink. If you're in the ticket operation and you're thinking, okay, we're going to get to these guys. Yeah. Watch how we stick it to them. Yeah. You're not getting in the building for the first two games. And then all of a sudden you look and you're like, man, we're really selling tickets in game 6. We're humming. You realize it's all people from Toronto driving up the 401. But Ottawa, I mean, it's too bad that the focus is even on that because it's game 6 of a conference final. Listen, they got embarrassed a couple of days ago. I don't love their chances now of winning the series. But could they win tonight? Yes, they could win tonight. Could they push it to 7? Absolutely, they could. They got to be a lot better. They've got to make adjustments. But the idea of people not buying tickets because of what happened in Game 5, I don't think that flies. I don't buy that.
No, you're in or you're not in, right? Mm-hmm. And like we said, like, you know, maybe there's a smaller number of real Sens fans than we thought.
Yeah.
And this has a lot. I mean, Pittsburgh, I was reading this today. Pittsburgh, if they win Game 6 or Game 7, for that matter, they will become the first team in the post-cap era to go to the Stanley Cup Final in back-to-back years.
Really?
And they'll have another opportunity to become the first team since the Red Wings in 98 to have back-to-back Stanley Cup champions.
To win it for the first time since the late 90s.
Yeah.
We'll get back into that later in the hour. Sam Mitchell will join us in about 15, 20 minutes. Let's head down to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Here's Richard Griffin from the Toronto Star. What's happening, Griff?
Hey, Brian, everything good here.
All right, man. Everything's good in Milwaukee.
It is, It is Milwaukee, though.
I was going to say, there's got to be like some caveat that comes with that.
Hey, right? hey, my sister-in-law lives just up the road there in McQuan.
McQuan, Wisconsin?
They like Milwaukee. My wife and daughter, Rich, were just in Chicago, so they all had a wonderful time in Chicago. They didn't go to Milwaukee.
Yeah, I love that. That's the best part about Milwaukee is you fly into Chicago first and hang out there. Go ahead. What's your take on Milwaukee?
Well, one of the guys that came up with the media had the off day yesterday, so he flew to Chicago and took the train up, and he said the train up was pretty empty. I said, yeah, but the train leaving is pretty full.
Yes, exactly. Getting out of Milwaukee is not a tough sell. But I don't think a lot of people realize, we've been talking about this throughout the afternoon, that Milwaukee sitting atop the NL Central. I mean, how many non-diehards would even know that trivia? Are they actually feeling good about themselves? Do they feel like they can keep this up, or is it just a matter of time before the Cubs blow past them?
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of time before the Cubs blow past them, and they are feeling good about themselves because they've got a young team that, you think Maple Leafs, you think a team that was trying to think of themselves as a contender 2 years from now. All of a sudden, it's late May, and they find themselves in first place, so... You know, you're looking at that sort of a team, young and athletic, and they beat the Jays twice at Rogers Center in the opening homestand. So, they are a good team, and they sort of ran into one with Eric Thames and his league-leading home run totals when he was a complete bust with the Jays.
You know, Rich, you talk about young teams, in the NHL, you get a young team, you get a bunch of young players coming in. How a team in Major League Baseball trying to say, okay, we're trying to go with some younger players. How difficult is that to do, considering, the progression of players through the levels and trying to time it all out, so you can be that young team?
Well, I think it's a lot tougher, or it is tougher in baseball because, as you point out, Craig, there's all these levels to go through, and it's learning and adjusting to pitchers. And to me, the Brewers are so young, and they have young position players that they haven't even gone through the league one time. So they have an advantage, the enthusiasm and the aggressiveness at the plate. They have an advantage until veteran pitchers and teams get a good read on them in the scouting reports. And there's so much video scouting now in baseball that they will find holes in their swing, and it will catch up with them, and the Cubs and the Cardinals will begin to assert themselves. But, for a city like Milwaukee that wasn't expecting much, this is a great way for them to start, especially when you look at veteran teams like the Jays who have been suffering injuries, and who knows whether it's because of an aging roster or just bad luck. But, a team that had a lot higher expectations not doing as well.
Well, and it's a perfect segue into the news over the weekend, where Aaron Sanchez is back on the DL for the third time already this year. And Scotty Mack, our buddy, has caused a bit of a stir here because he brought up the idea of maybe him moving to the bullpen if they decide, or if they come to the realization that at a certain pitch count, his finger's ready to fall off. I can't picture that ever being the right move, Rich, just because this is not a guy who's wavering. This isn't a guy who's breaking in. This is your horse. This is the guy who you thought could win a Cy Young this year. I would rather he sit for a month and a half, 2 months, and come back and try to complete the season every fifth day, as opposed to rushing him back or putting him in more of a precarious position where you decide, you know what, let's just put him into the bullpen. What's your take on that?
Well, Brian, you can tell Scott that for once he's wrong on a baseball issue, because we're talking with Aaron Sanchez in the dugout before the game today, and he's agreeing with you and agreeing with me in that it's not a matter of him being in the rotation or being in the bullpen. He's not even going to throw for the next, he doesn't know, 3 weeks, month. He's not even going to pick up a ball and throw and toss, because he said it's the middle finger reacting to the baseball as it leaves his hand. It's not really the stress of the number of pitches that he's throwing. It's just the stress of throwing any number of pitches. And so he's shutting it down with the blessing of he's had three different injuries. He's had the original blister that they removed a third of the fingernail vertically. Then that fingernail split sideways. And then this latest one, going on the DL, is because blood blister on the tip of that, the same finger. So, you know, it's working itself up, but, you know, who knows whether that means it'll be gone the next time or whether it'll just go through the routine again, go through the circle. And, yeah, no, it's not a question of bullpen or starting. It's a question of making it right. And he's now of the mind that he's not going to take any chances until it's 100%. He talked about his career being another 10, 12 years, and that it's not all about this year.
How common or uncommon is this type of a situation for a pitcher?
Well, I mean, it seems to be more and more common. Rich Hill with the Dodgers has the same situation. He's on the DL. There's a couple of other stud starting pitchers who have blister issues on the disabled list. I think it has as much to do with what Sanchez is talking about. You're paying a lot of money to these guys. They have a lot of money tied up in their future. Their agents don't want to do things short-term. They want them to think long-term. And I think that there's more and more around baseball where teams are looking to the DL for the short-term. And this didn't used to happen. It never used to happen like this. Guys would pitch through it. Guys would adjust their deliveries and their repertoire. But now they're just going on the DL, thinking of next year and the year after and the rest of their career. So, yeah, no, it's becoming more and more common, Greg.
With Richard Griffin from The Star. For me, Rich, this brings me back to last year and how overly cautious they were with him and the innings limit and fact that he skipped a start or two. And that was the biggest story of the season, quite frankly, was what was going to happen with Sanchez, because halfway through the year, the guy was top three in the Cy Young, and he kind of faded, but also because of all the attention of him going down to Buffalo and him skipping starts, I think it hurt him in the end. And this is a perfect example. Like, them limiting innings had nothing to do with what popped up this year. I mean, you can't predict when a guy's going to get banged up. This isn't his elbow, his shoulder. This is fingertip blisters we're talking about. And if anything, I would take out of this, hey, if you got a horse and he's healthy, ride him.
Yeah, and it makes it seem ridiculous and ludicrous that everyone was so concerned last August when they left Sanchez back from a West Coast trip for 10 days and sent him to the minor leagues, and he didn't pitch in the minor leagues. It was just a decoy. Trying to save his inning count, and for 10 days he did nothing. And now three times for 10 days, he's been forced to do nothing. I mean, as you're saying, Brian, you know, they could have had him for those 10 days, and at least those innings would have been on his record. But they're trying to protect him, and now look what happens. We don't even know at what point he's going to be able to get back into a minor league game, much less with the Blue Jays.
Jose Bautista starting at third tonight. What was the reasoning given for that move?
Well, the reasoning is different from what John Gibbons tells you. The real reason is that Chris Coughlin is a donkey at third base, and he's now in left field, and Bautista, who should be in right field, is at third base. So that tells you what they think of Chris Coughlin, and he played enough games there that they know that any ball hit on the ground. This is a team with a rotation that's not 100%. It's not their guys out of spring training that needs as much defense as they can. And if they're thinking that Jose Bautista is a better option defensively at third base, then that just tells you what they think of Coughlin's defense, because he is in the lineup today but playing left field.
And they must just be buying time, right? Like Tulowitzki and Donaldson, they're taking hacks, they're playing minor league games. How far away would they be from actually rejoining the team?
Yeah, Gibby, we just left his office about 15 minutes ago. The door had been closed for about 10 or 15 minutes, and when he let us in, I accused him of about to be fired like he was the last time the team came to Milwaukee, but he denied it. But they were talking injury, and the thing with he mentioned just as we were leaving that he expects Donaldson and Tulowitzki to be coming back in tandem on the weekend. So that'll be that'll be a real boost for not only the crowds that are going to be there this weekend, but for that clubhouse when those two guys walk through the door and if they can remain healthy.
Great stuff, Griff. Try to enjoy yourself in Milwaukee. We'll do it again soon.
Okay, Brian. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Rich.
There's Richard Griffin from the Toronto Star. So reinforcements are on the way, but you just have to ask yourself, is it too far down the road?
Yeah, well, it's interesting what he said about, you know, the long term with Sanchez, right? Like, you know, that it's becoming more common that pitchers did pitch through this before and alter their delivery a little bit to get around it. But now, you know, the
power of the agents and the super contracts, man.
And that's what it is.
Absolutely.
That's exactly what it is.
Because all of this data counts in terms of what their case is going to be in a year or two when they're asking for $200 million.
Well, I mean, and asking for whatever you want, it's like anything else. You want a steady flow of revenue. And the agents want a steady flow of revenue. So if they can get a player to think about 12, 13 years and they're taking a percentage of that contract, that's just that's cash flow.
It's in their best interest.
It, darn right it is.
Every single time. We'll get back into the NHL playoffs. Game 6, Sens, Pens can be heard right here on TSN 1050. Game 4, Cavs, Celtics tonight. Sam Mitchell will help us tee that up. What kind of game should we be expecting out of LeBron? I think I know the answer to that, but we'll see what Sam has to say about it. And Jeff Weltman, out of Toronto, on his way to Orlando. So the GM of the Raptors is leaving town to take over basketball operations for the Magic. We'll get Sam's take on that as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Big sports night ahead of us. Jays in action in Milwaukee. Game 6. Pens looking to put an end to the Ottawa Senators' run, and they would, of course, meet Nashville in the Cup Final. And Game 4 tonight, I'm very intrigued to see how LeBron James plays tonight. I fully expect him to just go legend. I think he'll go off on Boston. Game 3 was an aberration. 11 points, no points in the fourth quarter. And the fact that, like, he must be so used to this because his whole career he's been a lightning rod for whatever reason for controversy. Now, one of the controversies was self-inflicted. The decision, the idea to do it publicly, the way that he did it, horrible PR move. And I understood at the time why people were hating on LeBron. I was hating on the optics of it, too. I guess you could hold it against him because Michael didn't do it and Magic and Larry didn't do it. They didn't go somewhere else to win their titles and become a part of a stacked team. But still, you got to give him credit for playing it out, being the guy that he was in Miami. Now he returns to Cleveland, goes to the finals 2 years in a row, including winning an NBA finals a year ago. But
the best team didn't win.
But according to the owner of Golden State, the best team didn't win. That's very important to point out. But for the rest of it, I mean, he's squeaky clean. On the court, off the court, the guy's he's a brilliant player. He's the greatest basketball player I think I've ever seen, and I had the privilege of seeing Jordan. I really do think LeBron would be right there.
And represented his family and
everybody,
everything, like
across
in
the board.
Exemplary fashion.
The epitome of a pro.
Yep.
And yet, there are always bullets in the same chambers, the same hot take artists out there waiting for him to have one game so that they can unload on him for a week and a half. And that's what's happened over the past 48 hours. He had an awful game. Everyone does. Jordan had awful games. Gretzky had awful games. Brady, Montana.
You have a bad day sometimes.
It happens. Sometimes you have bad games.
Their bad days happen in front of a television audience of millions.
Right.
Right? And everybody watching, and like you said, with the chamber loaded to unleash the bullets. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I mean, that's really what it's about, right?
But I would say use up all that oxygen, use up all the bullets, because I don't see it happening again.
No, I don't
I just
either.
Don't see it happening again.
Well, you know, I say this, and I want to ask Sam about this at some point here, too. But, you know, I talk about what Guy Boucher said the other day about the Penguins being the thing, and I said it's an example of smart people making a dumb comment. And I think with LeBron James, that whole decision thing, it's an example of a smart guy, smart people just made a dumb decision.
And ultimately,
right? It doesn't mean you're dumb. It just means
physically
it was,
harm anyone
right,
either, Craig.
Right, I know. But you know, like you said, whatever the optics are, right? But like, I mean, sometimes, I mean, that happens. But it doesn't mean they're dumb. It just means that it was not very smartly handled, or it was
right.
a dumb comment, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, exactly. And it should not define your career.
Totally agree.
But if you're a hater and you're looking for reasons to hate, and that's really all he's offering you, you are going to cultivate that. You are going to hope that can bloom into all these different hot takes and just a family tree of hot takes where you can follow the lineage everywhere. And ultimately, you're right. It's a smart guy, a guy who's overly polished. Because when he was 14 years old, everyone was talking about him, and everyone knew he was going first overall. And he knew at that time the expectations would be, you have to compete with Jordan for the all-time greatest. And guess what? All he's done is follow through on all of those expectations. Lapse of judgment. bad move. But ultimately, completely harmless.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Completely harmless. Now, this is a very different situation. But you look at what Kevin Pillard did a week ago.
Yep.
Position he put himself in. Now, that could actually harm people if you're affected by the word, if you start to think, okay, maybe this is the way he thinks, or you perceive him a little bit differently. Obviously, using a homophobic slur is a lot deeper and can trigger more emotions, I would think, than the decision by LeBron, which was simply on a fan level, and that's it. Like, I get it. If you're in Cleveland, you hated the decision.
Oh, yeah.
You hated the way it went out. I get that. But it didn't really change your life in terms of your emotions or your mental stability or what have you. But Kevin Pillard, like, I'm intrigued to see what happens with Pillard when he gets home. I would think people in Toronto will just continue to move on. I don't think the story continues to hover, but he hasn't played a home game.
No.
Hasn't played a home game. So, I don't know. Will there be a sign? Will there be some boos? There could be. There could be. But, you know, I think Kevin Pillard has said it properly over the past few days. He doesn't want this to define his career. He wants to grow from it. He wants to move in the right direction. And I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. But he will. That hopefully won't make the same mistake again.
Well, and same with Getzlaff. And Getzlaff knows that he an inappropriate comment. And I would imagine that, you know, the comment now that he used, the inappropriate comment, will now move the dial where that now will not be acceptable as an inappropriate comment anymore. It will become a slur. And you got to get it out of your vocabulary. You just can't use it anymore, right? And that's, as we talked about it last week, it's not about the locker room, or you just can't use it. Mm-hmm. End of story. So stop using it.
Well, it's so true on so many different levels, including the business level, which is one that I'm not sure gets addressed enough, that the league and the players realize you can't have that on camera. You can't have that kind of exposure to that kind of language, or your players, your performers, your entertainers, who you're trying to build up in a certain way. Because you can get knocked down real quick, man. It takes a lifetime to build someone up. It can take a word or two to knock someone down.
Janet Jackson, Super Bowl halftime.
Mm-hmm.
She hasn't appeared on any big thing since.
I haven't seen her much since, you're right.
And people say, oh, well, she's dated or whatnot. I'm just saying, but, like, you know, one significant miss in front of tens of millions of people, and we talk about, you know, the national TV rights. We're talking, like, between NBC and Rogers, we're talking $650 million a year, $700 million a year Canadian that are being paid for the rights to broadcast game. Don't blame them, because the salaries have gone up, and, you know, everybody's benefiting from them being involved. So don't say, oh, well, with all the cameras, well, we can. Oh, no, this is part and parcel now.
Well, it's exactly why Kevin Durant has been taking so much heat over the past couple of days, because we got this clip we're going to play. Listen, Golden State, they're 12-0. They can't control the opposition they face. They're not going to lose games on purpose to make a series interesting. But he is an employee of the league. He benefits greatly from TV money. And ultimately, that is the biggest piece of the pie in terms of what the players are feeding off of. Not the tickets being sold. Not the brand association.
You're right.
How many people are watching on TV? And as a result, how much is ESPN, Fox, NBC, CBS, TSN, Rogers, whatever, how much are they willing to pay for the rights? And that's what gets divvied up as hockey-related revenue, basketball-related revenue. And some people, again, have not been critical of Golden State, but I think they're just calling a spade a spade. I've been doing the same thing. I think long-term, what Golden State has done will benefit the league. Because long-term, it's a great story for fans. I got to witness the great Golden State Warriors. I got to witness this team go to three straight NBA finals. And the same thing with Cleveland. Cleveland's doing the same thing on the eastern side of the bracket. Long-term, hey, that was unbelievable. Remember 3 years in a row in the finals and how great they are, presuming this year's final will be entertaining? But you'll forget about the buildup. You forget about them going 12-0 and how predictable everything. They're blowing teams out. They're winning games by an average of like 16 or 17 points against San Antonio, the third best team in the league. Like I said earlier, jokingly, Disney's going to make a movie out of Boston beating Cleveland in Game 3. That's in the conference final, the first place team winning a game by 3 points, and we're treating it as if it was an absolute miracle. It was the greatest game or upset in the history of the NBA. Speaks to the greatness of Cleveland and Golden State. But fans are sitting there saying, why am I watching? Tell me why I'm going to watch if I know the outcome. If I know who's going to win, why should I be watching? And this is what Kevin Durant had to say.
As players, we want to go out there and win as much as possible, and play as great as you can. You know, whatever happens, with the score, it happens. So really that to the fans who feel upset. If you don't like it, don't watch it.
If you don't like it, don't watch it. And you know Adam Silver and the owners were probably thinking, I understand what you're saying. He's right. We're out there just trying to compete. We're trying to win. But the old, you don't like it, don't watch it, that had to set off some radar, I would think.
Well, I mean, on a much, much smaller scale, Brian, and, you know, we sit here and we spend 3 hours on radio and we talk and we have opinions and that's why we're on, right? And, you know, but people sit down and disagree with you or whatnot, and we can't just say, well, if you don't like it, don't listen.
Mm-hmm. We're in the business of getting people to listen.
Well, and I mean, we might not like what somebody says. Oh, I didn't really agree. Okay, that's okay, you didn't agree. But you can't say it.
Right.
It's inappropriate.
It's
and
very
the players
cavalier.
At a larger, I mean, the NBA, the salaries went up. Kevin Durant got way more money because of what TV happened, mm-hmm. which means that the TV people feel that, like, we're going to pay this much money because we have this many people tuning in.
Well, there's a connection to these teams, Cleveland and Golden State in particular, sitting all these players during the regular season games. Like, and that happened. I believe it was the Cleveland-Golden State game. I think it was...
It was San Antonio.
Yeah, and San Antonio was involved greatly, too, as well. Yeah,
it was the San Antonio-Golden State game.
Okay, so there you go. Yeah, you're right. And they all sat players.
Yep.
Curry sat, Thompson sat, Draymond Green, Iguodala sat.
And all the San Antonio guys.
Kawhi Leonard sat. They all sat.
And it was like they should have set the Raptors 905 team down to play.
It might as well. Jerry Stackhouse can go and coach them. And the conversation, it wasn't from an ignorant standpoint. The league, and everyone knows the benefits of that. We get what the coaches are thinking. The coaches are very focused. They're thinking, what is in the best interest of my team, my player, so I can try to win a title? I appreciate that kind of competitive nature and that kind of thought process. I think you have to be ruthless if you're a coach. But this is why the coaches don't run the league and can't run the league, because they don't think about it through the prism of what the fans might be thinking. And this is where I do think this is a big issue for the NBA. I think there are two big issues that have come out of this year. The predictability of it all, that you're going to have Golden State against Cleveland, and I can't imagine that it's going to be a different final a year from now. I just assume, as long as everyone's healthy, for 4 years in a row, it'll be Cleveland versus Golden State. So how do you sell to the other 28 fan bases that their teams have a shot on opening night in the middle of October next year, but also the idea of all these great players sitting for big games? It's a real problem. And I think it's on Adam Silver and the owners to step in, who employ the coaches, go to Greg Popovich and say, Greg, play him. What's Popovich going to do? Is he going to quit? I don't think he'd quit. I think he'd understand that. I think he's a smart enough guy if you reason with him.
He's smart, and I think they're all smart. And I think that, you know, that I'm not – I don't know this. It's only my own speculative comment that, you know, maybe in Greg Popovich's own mind, he just says, well, you know what? I'm going to stand up for something I believe in too, right? He's going to put a little small stake in the ground too.
That right.
Like, they're not going to. I'm going to sit out my guys, right? And you know, maybe he feels it's important to do that. Maybe he feels that to galvanize his team in some way, shape, or form that helps him too. Total speculation,
mm-hmm.
But you know, you can't have it.
No,
you just can't have it.
Well, and I remember Steve Kerr at that time. Yeah. Golden State was on like the back end of a 6-game roadie.
Right,
I think it was like 6 games in 10 or 11 nights.
That was the one they
nights.
Were on that whole big run through.
Yeah.
I think they went through Orlando and
then up
came
to
back
Minnesota and down. And it was a ridiculous amount of miles that they actually flew and were traveling. But Kerr came out almost in protest of the league, saying, because of that, we're not going to do this. Almost from a petulant standpoint. Like, well, you made the schedule, so we're not going to play. And it's almost like, I beg your pardon, like, this is the way it works. Every team at times has a difficult schedule when it comes to traveling. And who are you to put yourself above the league and suggest that you're holier than thou and you're going to protest the unfairness of this schedule, the same schedule that has you about winning 68 games or whatever and going to another NBA final?
So let me ask you this question. What did you make of Randy Carlyle's comments post-game last night about the schedule?
Oh, I think Randy needs to figure it out.
I'm stunned.
Randy needs to – like, they played every second night.
Yeah, but he said it's our 7th game in 13 days, and it's like, you know, an extra day. Like, I was stunned, Brian.
Right. Exactly. Well, the previous round, yeah, you went to 7. If you win in four or five or six, then well, you've had your time.
But they won the first round of four.
Right. Exactly. He wasn't complaining at that time when they had 10 days off probably or whatever it was. Yeah,
But back to your point about this is what the schedule says. The league comes in and says, oh, no, we're starting right now. Mm-hmm. I was just really surprised.
Yeah, that kind of almost let them off the hook to an extent. You know, and he had a great series. It's not like he got blown out.
Well, and he talked about how his team played. So we didn't, you know, executing. We would have liked to have executed better. He thought they did a lot of right things. I was just, as he was going on, I was like, where's he taking this? And I would like to know what he would expect the league to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is a guy who's been in, he played in an era where they played every second night in the playoffs.
Well, the first 5 days of the playoffs had four games. They play back-to-back, day off, back-to-back.
Right.
That's how it worked.
And he's old school. He seems like the kind of guy behind the scenes that would be carving the new age player. I don't think Randy Carlyle has ever done himself any favors speaking publicly. I don't think he's overly comfortable. I think he naturally, he was probably trying to help himself. I'm sure he was trying to protect his players. Maybe he felt like that was needed. And that's admirable. I'm sure the players would respect that. But I can't recall a time, and I listened to him every day for 2.5 years or whatever it was, 3 years, where I said, wow, that was a really smart commentary. Some guys just are good with the media. Some guys aren't. Some guys are comfortable. Some guys can use it to their advantage. Some guys don't.
Well, I think your point, too. So another factor is for the players, what does it mean to, you know, when the TV networks are paying and you got to go and play and mm-hmm. you can't make comments like that? And it's probably true for coaches, too. You know what? You're speaking after every game. You know, you're part and parcel of explaining what happened. We know that there's emotions in the wins and there's emotions in the opposite emotions in the losses. But they have to take the same approach, too, that, like, we're all selling something.
It's all a big engine.
Yeah.
It's almost like the sporting world is a car, and, you know, the players are the engine, the coaches are the steering wheel, the GMs are the brake pads or whatever. Media and the fans factor in, too. We're all a part of this whole car that gets built into that's a very lucrative empire. You know, the pro sports world, they're generating billions and billions of dollars, but everyone has to play their part.
For everybody.
But yeah, right, exactly. We're in the same spot. If these guys decide that they're not playing, we're in big trouble.
we're all benefiting from it, Brian.
Right, exactly. And you know what? I said that for years in Toronto when people, you'd hear that. Well, I can't even say that the team never understood this. They always understood this. But, you know, fans would tweet in or text in and say, what the Leafs should do is boycott the media. And I remember thinking at that point, if the roles were reversed, if the media decided to stop covering the Leafs would go ballistic and would freak out because they understand the importance of having the media covering them because it's promotion. It's marketing. The more coverage you get, it means the bigger you are, the more important you are, the amount of people that are out there that you can reach. They would freak out. If the media just stopped showing up, there'd be a full investigation. Why aren't you here at practice? So I think you always got to remind yourself of that when they do bark at the media for a certain story. Or why are you tweeting about practice? We're just screwing around. Well, because we're doing the job, but we're all just a part of this car that we're all driving here. And it's, believe me, TFC would love the coverage that the Leafs get every single day. The Argos would pay a fortune to get the amount of coverage that the four papers and the two radio stations and the two networks talk about the NHL and the Maple Leafs in particular. It would be a big, big story.
Well,
if you didn't cover it.
It's part of the unwritten contract when you're involved in it. What's your role? To use a theater analogy, we're all part of a play, and we all have our roles, and we all have our parts. And if we go off script, understand that when Kevin Durant goes off script, he's gone off script in a significant way, right?
It's improv.
And now, okay, what does that mean for the whole play and the whole production, right? And because this isn't ongoing, there's lots of acts, and the acts go from year to year, and the acts change.
Game 6 tonight, Sens Pens. We're not sure it's going to be a sellout. I mean, the game's starting pretty soon, and we haven't heard any news on that.
Well, my brother-in-law phoned me the other day, and sent me a note. He said, do you think it's possible? Like, this is his mindset. He lives in Montreal. He said, do you think it's possible to get me some tickets for the Game 6 in Ottawa, if there is one? He wanted to take his kids and a couple of his nephews or nieces. And I said, sure, I'll check, right? So I go and check, and, you know, yesterday, and, oh, yeah, like, where do you want to, like, how much you want to pay? And I just kind of sent him a quick note, and I said, okay. And they told me, like, this is where it's at. I said, okay. So anyway, I got him four tickets, right? But his mindset in Montreal, right, is I got to think ahead to game six. But they're driving up from Montreal. They're going to see the game. They want to see Crosby. They're Crosby and Malkin fans, Pittsburgh Penguins fans. His mindset was, oh, I got to start planning. He knows that I can help him, right? And I'm thinking to myself, when I see today all the tickets available, I was thinking, like, I should have just directed him to Ticketmaster.
No kidding.
Or StubHub.
Go to OttawaSenators.com. You probably get them right there on the website. I mean,
But he was thinking, I got a plan for this.
It would be the same thing in Toronto. Yeah. Like, I couldn't even imagine the Leafs in this situation with 1,500 tickets available.
Well, no.
Outside of them being priced, you know, secondary market, someone bought them, and on StubHub they want 10 grand and people aren't willing to buy them. But these are like $150 for a ticket, which
wouldn't
is
happen.
Not outrageous
wouldn't,
in terms of the situation.
Wouldn't happen. You know, no. It wouldn't happen, and I
no,
know it wouldn't
no
happen.
There's no way. And you could never, there would never be fatigue either.
Well, did you see that today? I saw it somewhere where the Warriors tickets for the final, the NBA Finals, because it's the Stanley Cup Final and the NBA Finals. I didn't realize there's multiple.
You have to know these yeah. things, Craig.
Anyway, that the prices for the Nashville Predators are higher than the Golden State
Is
Warriors.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. And that's a big difference in economy,
graphic,
San Fran and Nashville.
Yeah.
Hey, you get to the dance one time.
Supply and demand, though, right? People's,
no kidding.
People are clamoring to get there.
I think.
Know what I wanted to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, like you over the next little stretch here when you're doing this, because games three and four are ways off, and I think they'll be June 3rd and June 5th in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have polls on who's going to be singing the national anthem.
Oh, I know. It's a good point.
Like, I mean, they're rolling out the stars. I mean, Trisha Yearwood comes out last night. I mean, you got to run some polls.
It's a great question. I mean, what's the highest level? Who are the three most popular country acts in the world? I'm not the biggest country guy, so I don't have a great read on it, but I would think they've got to be lining that up.
Sure,
we go to 3, 4, and 6. We need, you know, Garth Brooks to come bombing out or whoever.
Yeah, and I don't know if you know this, but you know Garth Brooks is really good friends with Barry Trotz.
Is that right?
Oh yeah, real good friends with Barry Trotz. Is a fan and really supported the Nashville Predators. So I think that's one of the names that. But you're going to have to do some work and have some discussion on this and get people polls and everything. Who do you think's singing the national?
It won't be the regular. I'll tell you that.
No, it's not. He came out last night though. Did you see him come out last night?
Was he there? Oh, I didn't see that part. No.
Yeah, he just came out and wave.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah.
Come out and hold the mic.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be
Johansson and Fiala doing the towels,
that
waving
was great.
The towels.
They all came out, and Mike Fisher came out in the suit.
It was good.
They're depleted, man. Yeah, they're moving, and like Johansson's not coming back. Fiala's not coming back. Fisher, I believe it's a concussion, is it not?
Yeah,
it seems like it is, so who knows when he's going to be back, but Nashville's going to a cup final. We'll see what happens tonight. We'll keep teeing up tonight. We'll get to the three stars and best bets next. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Looking at the hockey and basketball game tonight, I think Pittsburgh gets past Ottawa. And I'm under the number Boston-Cleveland. Throw down 20 and you can score 54. Find my picks on Twitter at TSN1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, get way into the game. If you happen to be listening live, and you're also a podcast listener, I don't know what's going on with the iTunes podcast. We've had some technical difficulties. People keep tweeting while we're on the air saying, hey, where are the podcasts? Hopefully we get them up soon. If not, listen live or watch live on TSN2. There's an alternative for you, wouldn't you say, Craig?
There is.
You can always find us somewhere.
Yeah, that's exactly
and
right.
You're going to be on Leafs Lunch tomorrow?
I will be.
Mitch Marner calling in?
Yeah, I want to talk to Mitch about his tooth. His mom's not going to be happy.
Is that right?
There was a lot of money spent on that lovely smile that Mitch has.
Yeah, and he lost a half a tooth right in the front, right? Yeah. So that whole thing, I would think, might have to come out and new teeth.
See what happens, yeah.
Well, listen, man, you talk to old-school players, that's nothing. Before the mouth guard and before a visor, not that a visor necessarily stops you from dental issues, but
you know what I was laughing about the other day, and I really was laughing at it. I was watching some Stanley Cup viz from the 70s, and I'm watching the guys with no helmets, and I'm just thinking, like, you know, like
it's,
you know,
so weird.
Like, well, if you tell young people today, like, they didn't wear helmets, like they didn't have, oh yeah, like one thing, no visors, mm-hmm. but no helmets, like, and I was kind of like, it seems so odd, like it was just, wow.
Well, and kids today would also come back and say, well, at least they had one-piece sticks back then, right? They didn't wear, like, use wooden sticks or something stupid like that. It makes you wonder what the game is going to look like in 30 years.
Oh, for sure.
Because something's got to change. Some sort of equipment or, I don't know, maybe it's simply having advertisements all over the equipment that will make it look very different. Full cages, I can't imagine they get to that point, but they might. You never know.
Yeah, you don't. Well, I mean, kids grow up wearing a full cage right up until the ages of 15 or 16. And even in the IIHF, under 18, you got to wear a full cage. Mm-hmm. So even if you're playing in the CHL where you don't have to wear one, you only have to wear the half visor. When you get to the IIHF, you're 18, or the World Junior if you're 17, full mask goes on.
It is a great upgrade, though, I must admit. As a former player growing up, as a guy who still plays sporadically, I'm an idiot. Like, I'm on TV. I'm not a TV guy necessarily, but you would think I would be taking care of my health a little bit more. When I play, I still use a visor.
Yeah.
I should be wearing a cage, because why would I take a broken nose or knocking teeth out? Like, what would be the purpose of that?
Do you wear your visor properly?
No, I wear it like Leo Komarov.
Okay. See, I don't play very much anymore, but if at all. But I have a visor that comes right, like, almost to the top of my lip. I don't know why. I mean, I don't know why I'm trying to protect this lovely nose.
Yes.
It's not a lovely nose to protect.
Well, you and I think we need to get onto the cages, but I don't know. Maybe it's just too proud. It's too stupid.
Yeah.
Probably because
really I don't need
both.
To lose teeth either.
No kidding. I could use teeth. It's kind of what this is my livelihood we're talking about. Anyway, buddy, we'll catch you tomorrow on Leafs
Lunch. Yeah, we will for sure.
Thanks for popping in as always. Yeah. There's Craig Button. The O-Dog will be back tomorrow. We'll see when Noodles gets back. Podcast, who knows? We're out of here. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.